And in fact, if we continue to use a gendered approach to dance, we are turning away the young people who have been coming, who are not gender binary and have very much appreciated our community and our style of dance, even though it's hundreds of years old, because it has moved into a new era and a new understanding of what it means to be a person.
This is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Okay, good day, everybody. This is another episode of the podcast Walk, Talk, Listen, and we are still in New York, where we are attending the Commission on the Status of Women 68, and I'm delighted with today's guest. Well, we know each other for a long time already. Yeah, Simon, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. It's certainly been a while that we've known each other.
Yes, true. Would you like to, or can I ask you to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Certainly. My name is Simon Chambers, and I currently serve as the Director of Communications for ACT Alliance. I come from Canada, and the main focus of our work in gender equality and women's empowerment is looking at global issues of gender justice. ACT Alliance has gender justice as one of our key thematics in our strategic plan. So looking at how we can improve work towards gender justice, equality, empowerment, both within the churches and church agencies who are members of ACT Alliance, but also in the contexts in countries around the world, as well as in doing advocacy work and fighting for justice in global spaces like CSW.
And Simon, you were here for the first week of the event. You're back now in Canada. If I ask you, you know, what popped, you know, in front of you for the first week, what would that be? Is there a person or an event that you attended? Or, yeah, tell me.
Yeah, I think if I tried to think about the things that really stood out for me, I think it was the positivity of the people that we were working with within the different events that I was part of over the course of the week. And it would also, I think, be the strong intersectionality of different aspects of gender work in the world. We were involved in a lot of work around the intersection of climate change and gender, or migration and gender. And it's really valuable to me to see these different strands of work coming together, because I find that we're often working in silos on different aspects of the problems facing the world. But we know that gender is what, you know, we often call it a cross-cutting issue, although I find that to be a little bit challenging at times, because gender really needs to be its own issue and it needs focus, budget, attention paid to it. But also it is cross-cutting in that it is part of everything else. And we know that the vulnerabilities of women are multiplied and increased when facing the impacts of climate change, or when there are people on the move, or all these sorts of spaces. So seeing those discussions happening within CSW is a real step forward to my mind. And it was something I was very pleased to see last week.
Because you also attended the last COP meeting, right? So what's it, so? You know, is it then correct to say that in a way there was also kind of an extension of the some of the discussions that took place at COP, or is it really separate? How do you see that?
There are large areas of overlap between COP and CSW. For example, the UNFCCC has the Gender Action Plan, known as the GAP. Which is part of the work of the COP every year. And so they do look at the Gender Action Plan as part of their discussions. But gender is not the central focus of what they're doing in that space. In CSW, it's the reverse. Climate is part of what they're doing, but it's not the central focus of what they're doing. So whenever I see organizations or people bringing those two together and really focusing in on that point where they come together, I find it really helpful because it shows that there is that connection between these two spaces. So our work in COP every year certainly involves a gender focus to that. And we're doing press releases and media actions to try and raise awareness and raise advocacy points around gender issues. And similarly, the need for focus on the impact of climate on women is part of the advocacy work that we do at COP this year. So we had a side event late last week looking at the gendered impact of climate finance and what the needs are to make sure that women and girls in all their diversity are well included in climate finance space. And one of our members from FELM, the Finnish Evangelical Lutheran Mission, who's an expert in climate finance, came to COP to specifically be raising questions around climate finance and following climate streams at CSW. And it's great to be seeing members of ACT Alliance putting that emphasis and doing cross-pollination between the different strands of justice work.
Okay, great. Thanks for that, Simon. You know, what if you look at the website of CSW68, it also mentions that this year, 2024, is a significant year for elections globally. Is this also an important year in Canada? And are you participating or encouraging participation in the electoral process? And why is this important from your perspective for gender equality? Or maybe you don't think it's important. Yeah.
No, I very much think that the next elections in Canada mm-hmm. will be important for gender equality. Canada is currently operating under a minority government, mm-hmm. which means that it could fall on any confidence motion. So there potentially could be an election this year. Currently, the ruling party is in an agreement with another party to prop them up. So if that agreement holds, then our next federal election will not be until 2025. But there are likely provinces who are having elections this year. And one of the things that we've been seeing in within the last year or 2 years is some fairly strong pushback against gender justice issues in Canada, particularly around LGBTQIA two-spirited plus people. So trans rights are being challenged in a number of provinces at the moment, being couched in parental rights language, but the discourse is not actually bearing any reality to what the laws and current practices in Canada are showing. They're just designed to raise fear and to score points with the more right-wing parties. So absolutely, elections are going to be hugely important for gender equality in the coming days and weeks, months, years in Canada. Additionally, the leader of one of our parties has started to refer to our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's feminist ideals. And when Trudeau took office in 2015, he brought in a gender equal cabinet for the first time in Canadian history. And they changed their focus in their ODA to what's called FIAP, the Feminist International Assistance Policy, where there's a focus on gender justice work around the world. And the leader of the opposition has begun to refer to Justin Trudeau's radical feminist ideology. And in my mind, the idea that women should be equal is not radical. But if this person becomes our next prime minister, I despair for where gender justice will go in this country. So I am, as an individual, absolutely encouraging participation in the electoral process, and I will absolutely be voting. ACT Alliance, because it's a global organization, doesn't get involved particularly in elections at a national level, but ACT members in the country are usually involved in preparing advocacy for the members of their congregations, preparing questions to ask of candidates around things like gender justice, migration, climate, and other issues that churches are quite concerned about when it comes to justice. So I suspect that our members will be involved in such things again, and that gender justice will certainly be part of that moving forward.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Simon. And just because I forgot, I should have asked you earlier, because we have this podcast has all kinds of listeners. I think 2 questions ago, you referred to UNFCCC. So to explain that, and ODA, maybe for the listeners, quick.
I apologize. I'll try and stop using acronyms. The UNFCCC is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And that is the organization which manages the COPs, the Conference of the Parties to the UNFCCC. It's the body that brings the world together to talk about climate issues. And the biggest success of the COP processes so far was the Paris Agreement back in 2015, which is helping to guide nations towards limiting climate emissions and global warming, ideally. ODA is official development assistance from governments, and it's how they, governments, particularly in the developed world, support through their budgets work happening in other countries, which are, quote unquote, the developing world, or the majority world, as we tend to refer to those countries, because development as it exists in the West is only one way of really looking at development in the world.
You know, this second week, actually, ACT Alliance that you work for is trying to, or maybe they did that already, is bringing in a youth delegation. I have a question for you around about the youth. How do you see the role of youth in advancing gender equality in your community or your country? And, you know, are you hopeful or worried in this context?
The role of youth in advancing gender equality is both hopeful and worrying.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredibly hopeful when I look at my own children and the communities that they're growing up in, and how accepting they are of a broad range of gender expressions, and that they just assume that the world should be an equal place, and that everybody is free to choose their own pronouns and to express themselves however they wish in terms of who they have relationships with or how they think of and identify themselves. And I've seen my own children and their friends and the children of my friends who are growing up in a world where that's just the norm. I see that in a number of groups of young people that I've worked with in church contexts as well. But I also see a large number of young people who are very conservative in their values and are pushing back against gender rights and are often very involved, very vocal in movements that are removing or decreasing the rights of women and people of other gender expressions around the world. Mm-hmm. So I think that young people can be on the more extreme side of all sides of this issue. And I'm certainly very thankful when I see young people for whom gender identity is a non-issue. I was speaking with one young person at CSW last week who said that when a session opened by somebody welcoming ladies and gentlemen, they got upset because it was a binary welcome into that space. And I thought it was fantastic that this 19-year-old is just so open in their understanding of the world that the idea that you would use a gendered terminology like ladies and gentlemen at the opening of a session in a UN space was something that shouldn't be happening. To me, that shows, you know, signs of where things are going and where I hope that they'll continue to go.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, Simon, what I hope this podcast is contributing to is connecting people. You know, by interviewing you now, I'm connecting you with my listeners. I also, because I really believe if you connect, if you're able to connect people, you know, maybe a discussion will start, a dialogue will start. And that's really important in this, you know, world that is more and more polarizing. So I try to kind of put it into practice by asking you a question of the previous guest. And that is actually a young person. And the question that she has for you is the following.
What are the ingredients for social change, in your opinion?
That's an excellent question. I think the ingredients of social change begin with political will. And that's will that needs to come from governments and it needs to come from people. Because I don't think social change can happen unless there is will. I think that social change involves an openness in people to be able to examine themselves and examine the world around them and see where injustices exist and where they persist. And there needs to be a willingness to stand up to injustice, even if it's something that makes you uncomfortable, even if it's a time when you are taking some risks because you have to stand up for what is right. And when people are willing to do that, then they're able to galvanize much more change. I think another aspect of the need for social change is the need for funding, because if there isn't the money behind the change that needs to happen, then often I find it becomes lip service. And we need to put our money where our mouth is. And I see this in climate space, but I see it in a lot of spaces where governments, for example, will talk a really good line. But then when it comes time to bring funding forward, that money isn't there. Similarly, I see an awful lot of corporations that talk about wanting to make sure that their products are ethically produced, or that they're taking into account climate change, or that they're, you know, supporting women creators or Black creators or these sorts of things. And yet when you look at where things are actually made and who is making money off of this, the values that they espouse aren't actually showing up. So following the trail of money is an important part of this. And then the other part of it that I think is key is policy. Because there are a lot of things that if you don't have some sort of clout behind them, you're not going to get change. I get frustrated when I see self-policing structures that are created, because when there's no consequences, there's very little impetus to actually follow through on changes that might impact the bottom line of a corporation, for example, or the next election cycle in a country. So seeing where there are opportunities for binding agreements or for laws that will actually mandate, and then to see those laws actually lived into. It's all well and good to have them on the books, but if they're not actually used, then again, things won't happen. So I think that the change is, it's bottom up in that it takes people and the will of people, the self-examination of people to call out change, changes that need to happen, and to have the courage to stand up for justice and for what's right. But it also takes the top-down approach where it requires funding and it requires mandates to make things happen. And when you can bring all those things together, change truly can happen in the world. But it requires all parties being at the table, working together in good faith and with good intentions to make that happen.
Your question for the next guest.
My question for the next guest would be, what one experience in your life has impacted your own sense of gender justice the most?
Okay, nice. Simon, music is very important to me, so I always have a question about music as well. If I ask you to come up with a piece of music or a song that, you know, inspires you or reflects your journey in gender equality, which song or piece of music would that be, and why?
Well, I have two answers to this. One is a genre mm-hmm. of music, and one okay. is a particular line from a song. So I'll start with a line from a song because I was thinking about this morning, and the line that came to mind was, "Man, I feel like a woman," because I think that that particular lyric can have so many different meanings. It can be something where a woman feels that she's particularly feminine, or that she's particularly strong and powerful as a woman. It can also be used for people who are actually looking to explore other genders. And I have friends who are non-binary who say that sometimes they feel more like a woman and sometimes they feel more like a man. And so that's a quote that I read and I think about in ways that are actually about breaking down gender stereotypes and the binary nature of gender and allowing some fluidity in there. So it's a lyric that the more I think about it, the more I realize that it can have a lot of different interpretations when taken on its own. The genre of music that I find has been most powerful in my own journey around gender is traditional folk music, because I belong to a traditional folk dancing community, which over the last 6 or 7 years has been doing enormous work in moving outside of gender binary norms. And for many years now, I have been dancing both in what was traditionally referred to as the gent and the ladies role in that community, and watching the small community that I belong to here in Toronto grow and change and become accepting of gender norms shifting within that space has been a journey for that community, but it's also been inspiring to see people as old as in their 80s who are coming to accept the fact that gender is not something that needs to define the way we dance. And in fact, if we continue to use a gendered approach to dance, we are turning away the young people who have been coming who are not gender binary and have very much appreciated our community and our style of dance, even though it's hundreds of years old, because it has moved into a new era and a new understanding of what it means to be a person. So every time I'm listening to that music, it gets me to want to start dancing. And when I'm dancing, I'm not worried about gender at all because anybody can be any role and dance any way that they want to.
That's cool. That's so cool. Thanks, Simon. Hey, normally I talk for an hour with my guests, but during the CSW, it's all shorter. I am a little bit cheating by. I came up with, I think, five or six rapid fire questions where I ask you to really, reply with one word or yes, no. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. In one word, what do you think is the biggest barrier to gender equality globally?
Neoliberalism.
Yes or no question. Can technology significantly accelerate gender equality?
Yes.
Who is one person that has significantly influenced your approach to gender equality?
Dave Robinson.
What's one book you recommend everyone reads to understand gender equality better?
The Bible with a feminist approach.
In three words, how do you envision the future of gender equality?
Rights, respect, and recognition.
Three R's. If you could change one thing about the world today to advance gender equality, what would it be?
Human nature.
What message would you send to your future self, let's say 5 years from now, regarding your work in gender equality?
Never stop being a gender champion.
Okay, is there any question that you would like to get back to?
Well, I could say a lot about all of them.
You can go back to one.
Well, then I'll go back. I think I'll go back to human nature, because I think that there's nuance there, and I think that human nature is something that can be incredibly powerful when people see problems in the world and come together to combat them. And you see this in humanitarian responses. You see this in the early days of the pandemic, how the world came together in support of health workers, for example, banging pots and pans and clapping at 7 p.m.
Sure.
every night. But you also see that human nature often involves selfishness and a sense that if others have something that you are somehow losing if somebody else gains. And it's the negative aspects of human nature that draw on fear and greed They're the things that I think truly need to change in order to advance gender equality. Because patriarchy exists to maintain power, to maintain social structure, and to maintain advantage for men. And that is something that if we don't change the way we're doing that, gender equality cannot happen. And gender equality doesn't have to be about loss. It needs to be about equity and equality. And in order for that to happen, there need to be changes. But it isn't a negative thing, but it is so often portrayed that way by people who are fighting against it.
Okay. Simon, I would like to thank you for your willingness to talk with me today and, you know, sharing your experiences and wisdom. But before we close, is there one question that I did not ask that I should have asked you?
The one thing that I was wondering about was the the idea of the motivations for being involved in gender justice.
Yeah.
Because I think that as someone who is a Christian who's part of the church and knows the role that the church can play both for good and as a block of gender justice, my journey of gender justice has actually been through my work in the church since I was a teenager, where we began looking at gender justice issues in the late 1980s in the youth ministry that I was involved in. And in the early 1990s, LGBTQIA rights were something that was a big issue in my church and continues to be today. But I remember when I started at university, I was wearing a pink armband all through my induction week into university because a gay priest had been removed from his parish in my diocese. And I was wearing that armband in solidarity with him. So gender rights has been part of my experience of the church through my formation in my Christianity and through pretty much the entirety of my life, certainly the entirety of my adult life. And it's something that I've been involved in all the way through, whether I was a youth worker or once I moved into humanitarian work, is sharing the need for gender justice, sharing a theology of gender justice, and working for the actual realization of gender justice in all the work that I'm doing now with ACT Alliance and seeing the impact of humanitarian disasters or of poverty and other development needs, health on women and girls and LGBTQIA communities. I become more and more convinced of the need for gender justice in the world. And so that's part of what makes me someone who really champions these issues in my life and in my work.
Well, yeah. No, thanks for sharing that, Simon. And then, yeah, I would like to thank you for today. You know, with this, for the listeners, you know, you heard Simon explain that he is part of the communication unit of ACT Alliance. He's really, you know, he's a great interviewer. So I was most nervous interviewing Simon. I would really encourage the listeners also to check out the ACT Alliance website, you know, because you did a lot of interviews, right? So, are they available already? And if not, when will they be available? Where should they go to check your stories out?
Yeah, so we'll be posting on social media. So on LinkedIn, on X or Twitter, as well as on YouTube and Vimeo, the videos. I haven't had a chance to be editing the content. I spent the whole week filming interviews and taking photos of events. So I haven't had time to put it all together yet, but I'll be working on that this week and we'll be posting that out there. And in addition, I was doing a number of interviews for other organizations as well. So some of them have already been posted through the Church of Sweden or some of our members in Latin America, CREAS and Ora de Obrar, the Anglican Communion. I've shared material that I shot for all of those organizations. In week one. So I know some of them have already been posting that material and others I'm sure will be coming out soon.
Okay. And it's actalliance.org?
Actalliance.org is the website for for us.
Okay.
We're ACT Alliance on most social media platforms.
Okay. Perfect. Hey, Simon, thanks a lot. And until we meet again.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure to be here and thank you for the interview.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Walk, Talk, Listen. Please check us out on 100mile.org or follow us on Facebook or Instagram.